My name is Patrick Hester, his name is John Anilio, and you're listening to a Capricorn special episode of the Functional Nerds. This is going to be episode number 219.
That is Patrick Hester. He's an author, a blogger, and a podcast dude. You could check out all of his stuff over at atfmb.com and follow him on Twitter at atfmb. My name is John Anilio. I'm a podcaster and a songwriter. You could check out what I do over at johnanilio.com as well as Twitter at John Anilio. And today, old friend Matt Forbeck stops by. He's the New York Times bestselling author and an award-winning author and game designer. He's got the Shotguns and Sorcery RPG Kickstarter going on right now, although I think that's probably done by now. And lots of books, lots of game writing, all sorts of cool stuff. We met Matt many years ago at World Fantasy, and we're happy to have him on the show again. Matt, thanks for coming on today.
Thanks for having me back, guys. I always appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. So we did. It was the first time that Patrick and I actually met in person. We had been doing the show for a year or two at the time. And we met Matt at the surprise. We met Matt at the bar at World Fantasy, as everybody seems to meet at the very. And I think it was my guess is that it was John DiNardo that introduced us all. John DiNardo is SF Signal, because if you're at a con and you know John DiNardo, John DiNardo will introduce you to anybody that he knows, and he will take time, and he just seems to be so great at that, of just being like, hey, do you know Matt? Matt, this is John.
That's where I got it, and that's where I started doing
it. Yeah, and you know, it's a great way to be. I've met a lot of people in the community, authors and what have you, and some people are just really great at that. Mike Cole is actually really good at that, too. I've been in a lot of events with Mike Cole, and he's always – he really makes sure that people aren't left out. If there's someone there that maybe people haven't met yet, he always goes out of his way to introduce. And you need those people there because, let's face it, creative people, sometimes some of us are a little introverted, introspective, and we'll hang out in our little corner and not talk to anybody. So you need these people that are going to be like, hey.
Wait, are you saying that writers are introverted?
Yeah.
What?
And that makes for
people
very
lock themselves in a room for hours at a time or introverted.
Which makes for very interesting parties, because when you go to a writer party, everybody's standing in one corner.
As long as it's all the same corner, right?
And everybody's staring at the door, going, "Oh crap, someone just walked in."
Yeah.
What if they?
But then we have our social butterflies that help lubricate the wheels and make it a bit more fun for everybody else. So that's good. It's good that we have a mix, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and one of the reasons we have Matt on the show today is because Matt is going to be the author guest of honor at Capricorn in Chicago in February. We are going to be the media guests of honor at Capricorn in February. So Patrick and I decided – actually, Patrick mandated this to me. He's like, get the other Capricorn people on so we can let people know that we're going to be at Capricorn.
Yeah,
that's fine. I think receiving a mandate is fine. Look, I'd rather that than have the show. And look, mandating is better than being passive aggressive. That's the way. You're better off just telling people what you want and what you think.
And it's
not like I argued it. I'm like, that's a good idea, Patrick. Let's do that.
Yeah, and thanks for making me sound like a dick. But it's essentially
if people go to the show and have everybody say, why didn't we do this beforehand?
Right.
Why didn't we promote this better, right?
Well,
this is much better this way. That's okay.
Yeah, well, John sends me an email, and he's like, these are the people I'm thinking about getting on the podcast in February. I'm like, well, wait a minute. No, we're doing Capricorn. We have to promote Capricorn. He's like, oh, yeah. Hey, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah, I'm praising your wisdom, Patrick. That's all I'm doing.
That's good.
But have you been to Capricorn before, Matt?
I have. I was there a couple of years ago, and I had a great time. I think Scalzi was the guest of honor that year, and I was hanging out with Michael and Lynn Thomas, and Mary Robinette Cowell was there as well. We had a great time just wandering around and chatting with people. It's a lot of fun. It's a great show. They have a gaming element, they have a writing element, they have a good party scene and costuming and everything else.
Now, John, before you get into questions, and I know you have some really good questions, but we have to drill down to the important stuff. So, Matt, near Capricorn, is there any place where you can get a good cannoli?
Well, you're near Chicago, right? So
yes.
It's got to be a good place. I'm not exactly sure. You're only about a half hour from downtown Chicago. And there's wonderful little restaurants and everything else. There's got to be a good cannoli. Giordano's restaurants are all throughout the Chicago area. Best deep dish pizza in the world. Fantastic stuff.
I don't know about that. I make a mean deep dish pizza.
I'm pretty sure about this one.
That does bring me to the second question, and this is horribly important. Anywhere near Capricorn where we can get a decent Italian beef sandwich?
Again, it's the pizza. You need the pizza.
No,
it's Giordano's.
There's more. There's more than pizza. Chicago is more than pizza. This is what I'm trying to convey to people. Cannoli, right? Italian exactly. beef sandwiches.
No, these are good things. Well, see, you know, my culinary guides down in Chicago are Ken Height and Will Heinmarch, and we'll see if we can lure them up there in that direction.
We need a Vienna all beef hot dog.
Yeah, they do a great job of that. Hot Dogs, which I think may have closed recently, is a legendary place in Chicago. If they haven't closed, we'll go there. If not, again, Ken and Will be able to show us what the successor to that is.
So for the listeners, we do this with video, and I can see John, and I can see Matt, and they can see me. And right now, I can see the gears in John's head turning because he's going, Patrick, I've been eating better. I've been working out. I've been losing weight. And you're talking about all this really fattening food.
So I mentioned it on the podcast before. I've been on what's called the slow carb diet, which is basically you eat no carbohydrates, no dairy, no sugar, but you do that 6 days a week, and then one day a week you eat whatever the hell you want. So on Saturday, you're going to have to like roll me around because Saturday is my cheat day, Patrick. So I will have some deep dipisha and I will have a beef sandwich and I will have everything on that day. But the rest of the days, I will be good. This has sort of become my lifestyle over the past 6 months. And it is fantastic. It's in my neck of the woods. It's just 1 o'clock and I've already had a beer. So there you go. That's now. It's like a beer at 11:30. Sure. It's Saturday. Why not?
Sounds like Wisconsin to me. It's okay.
So yeah, John, yeah. Completely out of character. I totally derailed you.
You were asking
questions about Capricorn, Matt.
Oh, well, my question was, how big of a con is it, Matt? How many people, you know, roughly do you think typically go?
You know, I don't know. I think it's in the low thousands. I think it's probably maybe 1 or 2 thousand, but I'm not sure off the top of my head. Last time I went there, I was on a panel with Gene Wolfe, for God's sake, right?
Nice.
And then, you know, I saw Gene later. He's in an autograph line, and there's no line for Gene, right? And there's I think him and John Scalzi were sitting together, and there was barely anybody there at all at that point. But, you know, it's a smaller show. That was a few years ago, and it's grown quite a bit since then, actually. I think it's in year 34 or something like that now. Mm-hmm. But it's got a very vibrant group of people that are running it. John Ickes is the chair this year, and he's a big game guy but also a big science fiction guy and fantasy guy. Mm-hmm. So I have high hopes for the show, and we're going to have a good time either way. Saturday is Valentine's Day of the show, so I have my wife coming down for the dance. So they have a great dance, and last time around, Scalzi was the DJ. So I don't know who they got doing it this year, but I'm sure it'll be a lot of fun.
Now, I find it interesting, the panels run for 75 minutes.
Yeah, wow. They're a little bit longer than your average, but then they have – it's like an hour and a half, and then they have 15-minute breaks in between, right? Mm-hmm. Essentially, think of it as a regular panel – except an extended question and answer session where you're not saying, oh, we only got time for one more, right? And you can let people come in and do a little bit longer if they want to.
I find that very interesting, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's smart because that does happen because at most of the cons that I've been to with the panels, it is already like, oh, we have 6 minutes left. Questions?
Exactly. Yeah, well, and that can be a pain. I mean, honestly, 2 hours is too long for a lot of panels, right?
Right.
But an hour and a half or 75 minutes, as it really comes down to with the break in between, works out pretty well. So I didn't have any problems with the last time at all.
So one fun thing, Matt, do you have your schedule yet?
They sent me part of my schedule, yes, actually. It's got a few things on it that's all tentative. It looked pretty good. One ironic thing I want to talk about for the convention, though, is that I'm the author guest of honor, and their gaming guest of honor is Margaret Weiss.
Yes. Right?
That makes no goddamn sense to me. there's a little bit of history behind it that explains it, is that Steve Jackson was scheduled to be the gaming guest of honor, right? And next to Steve, obviously, I'm the writer, and Steve's the game designer. But when Margaret comes, and she's a guest, you almost think we should swap, right? Mm-hmm. Because Margaret's clearly, you know, she's had more best-selling, New York Times best-selling books than just about anybody you would ever name. And actually publishes role-playing games as well. She published the Leverage game, is doing the Firefly game nowadays, did the Marvel Superheroes game for a while, but is not a game designer, so to speak. She's more of a game publisher. She knows and hires the right people. So it's kind of funny to have us in these opposite ends of our crossovers, and neither one of us really being in our strongest points, but being in our alternate points. But I think we'll have fun either way. Margaret's a wonderful lady and a great guest.
Yes, we just had her on last week.
Yeah, we just had her. We just interviewed her, and also found out that she writes romance novels with her daughter.
Yeah, with Liz. They do a great job.
Yeah, no, she was really fun. She was a great guest. So
her big thing is dog acrobatics, right? Whatever the right term for that is. But she has a couple of dogs that she just runs around like crazy and does league stuff with and just has a ball. It was fantastic.
Have you seen that video that made the social media circle? And it's like that. It's where they're running the dogs through the obstacle courses and stuff.
Yeah.
And in this one, the obstacle course is various plates of dog food. And the idea is that, you know, you have to command your dog to come to you and ignore all the food. And they show, like, the first dog comes through and everything's good, and the second dog comes through and they're timing you, and you have to do all the stuff. And they get to this golden lab, and, you know, time starts, and this golden lab goes from plate to plate just scarfing down the food no matter what the owner says. This poor owner's trying to get the dog's attention. The dog's just going from plate to plate, scarfing up all the food, eating it. You're looking, you're like, oh, am I getting caught? Am I in trouble? You know, doing that dog look as they're scarfing down the food. It is the funniest damn thing I've seen in a long time.
That's hilarious. I want to be the guy who had the dog that came after that, right? That would have been the easiest one of all. Nothing to it. Come on through, kid.
Cool. Well, so yes. For people that are on the fence about going to Capricorn, I mean, it's going to be great.
It's a blast. Yeah, it's
I'm going to Margaret Weiss is going to be there. Matt's going to be there. We're going to be there. It's going to be really fun.
Mary Robin Kamal is going to be there. Michael D. Thomas is going to be there. People we know.
Huh. I don't know Mary Robin.
John and I are on a panel with Mary on Geeky Podcasts.
Oh,
that John doesn't even know about because he hasn't seen
it. No, I haven't gotten my schedule yet. Yeah. That's awesome. Well,
and if I'm not mistaken, I think you're moderating that, John. So
I am. There I go. I love moderating panels. I do. I'm probably a bad at it because it's just like, why is the moderator talking the whole time? Doesn't he know he's supposed to just throw it to other people? God, he's so narcissistic.
This is why I have been mentioned on Chuck Wendig's blog as the best moderator he's ever had.
I know. I'll maybe defer to you. Oh, you know, I just mentioned narcissism. I was at the gym yesterday, and I read while I'm at the gym, like while I'm on my doing my elliptical, and I read on my Kindle, but they have the TVs. You can't avoid the TVs. They're always up there. So I sort of like ingest some news without even trying. And one of the news stories were men who take selfies may be narcissistic. And
really?
I'm like, oh no shit.
Oh.
It's like shy writers. What the hell are you talking about?
Have you seen this also made the rounds of social media? There is now a selfie device. It's this long handled device thing that you put your phone in to take selfies of yourself.
Yep. From a distance, right?
From a distance.
Group shots.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I did see that. Ridiculous. Oh, look, I'll take one once in a while if I'm with somebody. But no, there are people have epidemics of selfies where you just see nothing but selfie. Not too many people we roll with, but you do see some people just take an inordinate amount of selfies.
Meanwhile, Selfies, the television show starring what's her face from Doctor Who,
Karen Gill.
Yes, and the dude from Harold and Kumar.
Yep. John Cho
has
Sulu.
Been canceled.
New Sulu
canceled.
Yeah,
yeah, it's too bad.
Yeah, well, it didn't really get.
It wasn't a great show.
No,
all
right. It wasn't.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And Matt, what's your pick this week?
Oh. I'm supposed to pick something.
That's right.
Do you have something? Do you want to Patrick or I can go first if you want us to come
go
back.
Ahead,
to
go ahead.
We'll come back to you. How about,
John, yes. You go.
Okay.
What's your pick?
Okay, I'll go. I'm going to pick I got into audiobooks. Audiobooks are something that I've listened to a little bit of nonfiction as audiobooks. But I've been listening to fiction lately. My pick last week was The Magician's Lamp by Lev Grossman, and I actually listened to the audiobook version of that. And I'm interested in writing again. As people know, I actually did NaNoWriMo 2 times, but that's the only writing I've ever done. And over the past couple months, I'm sort of interested in doing it again. So I've been reading all these writing books, and I read Stephen King's On Writing, which everybody recommended for me to read. And, you know, his big mandate, the one thing that you take away from that book is, well, if you want to write, read a lot and write a lot. Very simple advice. And he's like, you just have to read constantly. You have to get, you know, as many stories in your head and get that voice in. And it made a lot of sense to me. And he's like, well, one of the things you can do if you don't, you know, because I do read all the time, but I read very slowly. So I decided, like, well, let me try audiobooks, because he actually mentioned that in it. So he mentioned that he listens to audiobooks. And actually, Jamie Todd Rubin, who's a friend of ours who does some stuff with SF Signal as well, who's a science fiction author, writes a lot of short stories. He's talked a lot about productivity and how he does a lot of his reading via audiobooks, and he's sort of a latecomer to audiobooks as well. So between Stephen King and Jamie Todd Rubin, I'm like, I got to give that a shot again. And I've been really enjoying, and it's great because you can, depending on the length of the book, you can knock a book out in a week or two in addition to reading another book at the same time too. So I use two different things. One of the things is the Overdrive app, which is if you have a library card, you can get some audiobooks from your library. So I've done that a couple times, but I'm going to pick the, cause it's different than when I tried it before with the Kindle app on your iPhone. You can get, if you bought the ebook, you can buy the audiobook and they sync up, and it's much better now. Cause it used to be, you had to have the separate Audible app and to do it, but now it actually plays through the Kindle app. And what's kind of neat is that you can actually look at it and it'll turn the pages for you. Not that I really do that too much, but it does sync it up perfectly. And so if you have bought some books for your Kindle or Kindle app, look at the ones that have the audio as the whisper sync. And if you already bought the book, usually the ebook the audiobook is a discounted price. So I bought, before the show we were talking about Chuck Wendig, and I had his Under the Empyrean Sky on my Kindle. And I noticed, like, oh, the audiobook is only $1.99. Well, let's try it and see how this works. It's only $2. God. And so I've been listening to Chuck's book that way and reading it a little bit too. And it's great. So, yeah, so I'm going to pick the sort of the sync between the audio versions of stuff on the Kindle. So that is audiobooks in general, but that specific ones. That's my pick this week. Matt, do you have your pick now?
I have a list of things I wrote down here. The one thing we actually did with my family recently was we started watching The Librarians on TNT, which is a new show by John Rogers and Dean Devlin. These are the guys who did the Leverage TV show. And they have a whole bunch of geek guys behind it. I mean, John and one of his main writers, Jeremy Bernstein, is a buddy of mine. And they actually met playing Dungeons & Dragons, believe it or not. And that's how they got together doing all this writing. And The Librarians is a neat show. It stars it's based upon a series of TV movies that Dean Devlin produced and directed for TNT back in the day, starring Noah Wyle from ER, right? Mm-hmm. And he plays
Falling
this kind
Skies.
Of, exactly. He's on Falling Skies nowadays. He was he plays this geek librarian version of Indiana Jones, essentially. He goes off and finds all these different legendary mythical items and wanders around the globe. Now, one of the problems they had is that Noah was doing Falling Skies, so he wasn't available for the whole series. So they built up a group of librarians around him that are like his junior librarians that go off and have adventures with and without him throughout the season. And it's a neat show. It's not very dark. It's not very horrible, but it's got all this great acting in it, got great writing in it, and something I can sit down with all my family, all my kids and my wife, and watch and just have a ball with, right? And sometimes it's goofy, but it's always goofy fun. And I really enjoy it. And the guys who do it, again, are the guys who did the Leverage TV show, which I wrote a novel for. And I've been friends with John since before he started writing television. And it's just really great to see them pull this off and do such a great job of it. I'm looking forward to seeing the rest of it.
It reminds me of Warehouse 13 a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, my kids are like, oh, it looks like a bit like Warehouse 13. It has the kind of setup for like Buffy the Vampire Slayer as far as gadgets and mythical items that you're talking about, and that kind of a Scooby gang cast, right?
It's like Warehouse 13 meets Leverage.
Yeah, but all that stuff predates all those shows, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like they're tapping those shows directly. They're tapping stuff that goes even further and deeper back. I mean, honestly, if you look at Leverage or The Librarians, you can look and say, oh, there's your fighter, your cleric, your wizard, and your thief, right? It's very much D&D party mechanics. I mean, all that stuff. The reason that we respond so well to that is we understand what it means to specialize and work in a team as opposed to being the lone individual who can do everything. And that's what a lot of these shows are showing us, and that's one of the reasons that they're fascinating to watch. Even Star Trek, going back to Kirk and Spock and Bones, you have three guys who have different opinions and different sets of skills, and the way they work together and the way they form a team is actually the most intriguing part of the whole show, right?
Well, and that was one of the biggest problems with The Next Generation is that the teamwork wasn't there, because it was a really sad day on the bridge of the Enterprise when Captain Picard ordered Worf to fire at will.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, so that's a great show. I'm really impressed with that. I started reading Saga, which is a comic book.
Oh, that's great. Yes.
Yeah, from Brian Vaughn and Fiona Staples. Yep. Fantastic stuff. I finally read Ancillary Justice by Ann Leckie. Amazing yep. book, love right?
Yes, love that too, yeah.
Very well deserving of all the awards that it won. It just, this gender bending thing so well in your head where they use the, mm-hmm. the female pronoun as a generic. But, you know, it's not just a game. It actually plays really well throughout the entire thing. And even when you're, you know, when it becomes invisible to you, and then it hits you again like three chapters later, you go, wow, it's still getting in my head and revealing how much that's invisible to us when we do it the other way around in your natural day. So, and besides that, it's a kick-ass story. I mean, that's not the only thing about it. It really does a great job. So those are my three things for this time.
Yeah, that's what I felt the same way about Anne Leckie's book. And when I read it, I'm like, oh, this is going to get nominated for a lot of stuff. And it did, and deservedly, because it was – a really different novel, and as you said, it was just a great story. But it did it's a book where you're kind of on your toes the whole time, because you really have to keep your head in it, because it does play with those, and you don't realize how when you sort of use the female pronoun for everybody, you don't realize how sort of we sort of gear towards the masculine typically in terms of that kind of thing. And it's like, oh, wait a minute. So is this a guy or a girl? I don't know. What?
It doesn't matter, right? It doesn't matter. Why should it matter?
Well, you know what's fun?
It's a brilliant way that she does it. It's fantastic.
You know what's fun? I recently submitted a couple of short stories to my critique group. And in the short stories, I never used any pronouns. I never gave any gender distinctions, nothing. I just left it completely open. And people were going, yeah, your character, he seems really interesting. You know?
Exactly.
And I'm going, yeah, but I didn't say it was a he. I never said it was a he. And they're like, right. Oh, yeah, you didn't.
Yeah.
And never gave it away. You know, because
that's our standard in our culture.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. fun, but it's fun to let people kind of fill in those blanks for themselves.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I had I actually went to go many years ago, but way before we started doing the podcast, I went to a signing for Joshua Palm. I'm going to pronounce his name wrong. Palmatier. He's got some books out now, and he was talking about that, how he writes and how he tries not to let, you know, the character he wants. You know, it's one of those things where I know a lot of authors were like, they don't want to get too crazy with the physical descriptions of the characters, because they want to let the reader sort of fill in their own thing. And he went, you know, even a step further with it, with kind of gender, that he doesn't really mention the gender of in this particular series that he was promoting at the time, that he wanted to let people put whatever gender they wanted into the main character. And I think at the end, you know, towards the middle, he did sort of reveal it. But anyway, it's an interesting way to play with it. But
no, I agree. It's fantastic. Actually, we were going to talk about Shotguns and Sorcery at one point, which is this novel series I did that did we did a Kickstarter for a role-playing game about. How one of the things I haven't really told anybody is that the main character, Max Gibson, throughout the entire series, is actually dark-skinned. He'd be African-American in our society, right? And I just don't bring it up at all. And if you read it that way and you take another look back at it, you can see that the humans in this society are just lower class all the way. And he's just fitting in with that. And when the artwork, when you see it, and in the cover, nobody's commented on the fact that Max looks dark, because he's not, mm-hmm. you know, he's not total ebony dark. He's mm-hmm. more, you know, standard African-American dark, right? And I just wanted to put that in there and just leave it out there and not put a bow on it, right?
Right.
And see how people took it. And so far, there's been zero comments at all. So maybe we're being too subtle. I don't know. I think it's kind of neat to play with that and see what people react to.
Well, I've done stuff like that enough now that my critique group goes, I assume it's this, but it's you, Patrick. So,
right, so
who knows? Who knows what this person actually is? And blah blah. That's kind of funny. I also did one. John, we're talking about like leaving it open to people. I did a story where I ended it with the whole entire story was this guy could make a phone call, and he could either call his sponsor, his AA sponsor, or he could call essentially a drug dealer, right? Mm-hmm. And get high. And I left it with, you know, he goes through this entire emotional thing, and at the end he picks up the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And right. That's where I left it.
Right.
And my critique group at the time shit themselves. They were so pissed at me because I didn't tell them which number he dialed.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So the question is, are you doing a good thing there?
Patrick,
or are you
what is
tricking him? You know?
Right, so right, right.
But you got a reaction, which is good.
Yes, exactly. So my pick, John, I know that you want to get to pick. So
yes.
There's a Japanese instrument, and I'm gonna spell it out, and maybe you can tell me how it's pronounced. G-A-Y-E-G-E-U-M. It's a stringed instrument.
Okay.
It's like it's got all these strings and you know it comes up at a point and anyway. So there is my pick this week is Luna Lee.
Okay.
And Luna Lee plays that instrument. I'm going to say the Gayagum.
I've seen it written before. I don't know how to pronounce it correctly. Okay. So, okay.
And she's playing this traditional Japanese instrument. Mm-hmm. And she's playing Jimi Hendrix and Stevie Ray Vaughan and Iron mm-hmm. Maiden and all these like rock and blues kind of songs on it. And it is amazing.
Is it all instrumental or is she singing too?
It's all instrumental, and usually she has like the vocal track from either the original song or someone singing it very closely.
Cool. I will give you two follow-up recommendations to that, because if you're going to pick music, then you know I have to like mm-hmm. insert my music nerdery into it. But I haven't seen much of them in the past few years, but there is a group called the 12 Girls Band. Have you heard of them before? So the 12 Girls Band is an Asian group of 12 women, and they play all traditional Asian instruments, so they probably have that instrument in there, but they also have the Eru, which is E-H-R-U, which is like an Asian violin, and they have the Koto, which is a Koto is usually the people sit when they play it. It's like an Asian harp of sorts. A lot of times when you have these sort of, you know, generic, like we're invoking Asia, then you'll hear a Koto playing.
And this is actually a traditional Korean zither-like string instrument with 12 strings.
Okay, I know exactly what you're talking about now.
Yeah.
But the 12 Girls Band do, they have all of those instruments. Now it's a little poppy, like they have like sort of like, you know, very sort of standard pop drums underneath. But they do really cool ranges. And if I recall correctly about 12 Girls Bands, I think they did actually do some sort of Western pop songs in that way. So really cool. I'll leave it at that because I can keep going.
And how Luna got me, and this is going to come as no surprise to anybody who's a longtime listener to the podcast, how she got me was the first song I heard was Mary Had a Little Lamb.
The Steve Ray Vaughan version.
Yeah. Mary had a little lamb. Doom, 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 doom. Its fleece was black as coal. Yeah. Yeah. And so she's sitting there playing that and she's like, down, 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 down. And I'm going,
yeah. No, I love all those various. I'm just such a big nerd for the music history and the development of it because. Kind of like any other culture or any other sort of art form, you know, before our world was connected, there were all of these, you know, you had your European countries and you had your Asian countries and African countries and kind of developed on their own for thousands of years. And so there are
why is this the first time hearing that?
But it's you know, there are similarities, and we'll just use music as an example. There are similarities between it, but it is so interesting to me to see that some cultures kind of developed one part of the craft to a certain extent and others kind of focused on another one. So when you're talking about Western music, and I don't mean country Western music, but I mean like European classical music, the big thing is harmony, the development of harmony and all this, the big orchestras with all these different things. But when you get into other countries, in classical music, comparatively to other countries, rhythm is pretty square in classical music compared to say Indian music. Or a lot of other Asian musics where the rhythm is so complex, it's almost like doing math equations. It gets so crazy. So their harmony wasn't quite as developed, but their rhythm was 10 times more developed. So I always find that so interesting. And then just different kinds of scales that are used and all sorts of I fall down a rabbit hole with that stuff as I'm doing right now. Right.
Well, the other thing, I was trying to trip my brother out, so I was looking for alternative versions of songs. I also found the twins that play the harp.
Oh, yes, yes. I'm
familiar with that. They were playing Hotel California and stuff like that, and I was playing that for him, and he's like, wow.
Yeah. Cool. Well, you know, I can keep going, and I don't want to.
We've actually talked ourselves into almost out of time.
Yeah, I know. Well, one of the things I want to mention that Matt did want to talk about before we do run out of times is Matt has contributed to the Marvel Handbook of the Universe. Oh, yeah. So, can you tell us what your contributions in the current version of the Marvel Handbook of the Universe?
Sure. The first one came out. Well, it's the Marvel Encyclopedia, and there was a series of them they did that were actually published by Marvel back in the 80s and early 90s, whatever. And then they licensed rights to DK Publishing out in the UK, which does these fantastic, fully illustrated, hardcover, gloriously printed books, you know, coffee table type books. Mm-hmm. In 2006, Daniel Wallace and a bunch of other guys wrote the Marvel Encyclopedia. That included a bunch of Marvel guys like Tom Brevoort and a bunch of other guys who are going to slip my mind at the top. And an introduction by Stan Lee, etc. And then I did the 2009 update, which was a pretty amazing amount of work because the Marvel Universe moves pretty goddamn quickly these days. They end up having like 50 some books out every month, and doing that over 3 years takes up a lot of story time. And then they changed things even more drastically over the next 5 years, and we did another one in 2014 that just came out. So probably at this point, like 80% of the words in the book are mine, right? Maybe more depending on what people have done or whatever. Some of it we've left intact from the original guys. Some of it I've just rewritten what they put in or I've had to add to or whatever. But I've gone over every inch of the book from one end to the other twice now. So, and hopefully in another 5 years or so we'll do it again. But I was very pleased with it. It came out back in, I think, April of this year and became a bestseller over the Christmas season. It actually hit number 5 on Amazon. And it's been on the New York Times bestsellers list for the past 2 months, actually, under their games and activities list, which has been fantastic. So it went from 20 to 16. Would probably still be selling if Amazon and Barnes & Noble had not sold out of it, right? Mm-hmm. And they haven't had it in stock since the week after Black Friday.
Yeah, it's
been doing fantastic.
I was going to say, I actually went into Barnes & Noble yesterday because I wanted to take a look at it, and I couldn't find it. They didn't have it in the Barnes & Noble by my house. Yeah, it's been sold out online
forever, and even the stores have been sold out in a lot of places. So I think Books A Million still had copies last time I checked, but they might be lying because I haven't tried to order. Who knows? When Amazon said, we should be available 1 to 2 weeks, and that was back on December 5th or whatever. Obviously, we misjudged the amount of demand that this would generate over the holidays. And we had featured on IO9 and a few other different blogs as great bargains to buy for the holidays or great gifts to give people. And it's gotten like 135 reviews over the last 2 months. And almost all 5 stars. Only reviews that get are bad are like, I didn't order this, or what the hell happened? or you know, the cover came off. I'm like, I gave my copy, my first copy I got, I gave my kids, and they literally read the cover off within the first week.
Wow.
So now they're just held together by black duct tape.
You know, Marvel has been doing some cool stuff. They just released a motion poster for a new Netflix series, and it just shows like this city, and then this D&D shows up. And I know that Marvel's owned by Disney, so I'm really excited that they're finally rebooting Donald Duck.
Daredevil.
I'm gonna say
you know, way back, you know. And the thing is, I love DC comics, and I love Image comics. I love comics of all sorts. IDW guys are good buddies of mine, and I wrote the Magic the Gathering comic books for them for years. Actually, comics are just tons and tons of fun. Just it's so much fun to see these things and see the history evolve.
Patrick, I'm going to reiterate something I said of quite a few months on the show when out in the movies there was an X-Men movie and a Spider-Man movie and a Godzilla movie out at the same time and the Captain America movie all. In terms of, you know, we're talking about the comics specifically, but, you know, in terms of TV, there's a S.H.I.E.L.D. show, there's a Agent Carter show, there's Green Arrow, there's Flash, there's Constantine on Netflix. Now we're going to have Daredevil and Luke Cage and Iron Fist and Jessica Jones. It's a golden age, people. Stop complaining. It's a golden age.
Yeah, you know, the good thing about it is a lot of these are good shows, too, right?
I mean, that's what I mean, yeah.
That, you know, you got one show on, and it was freaking awful. I mean, it was painful to watch, and you're like, okay, no wonder nobody wants comic book shows or movies anymore because they're terrible. Mm-hmm. But you get some really damn good writing and fine acting. I mean, hell, Avengers was the second highest grossing film of all time.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
Yeah. And a great film to boot. I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy, again, that came out this summer, fantastic movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was the highest grossing film of the year. And that's for what most people would consider to be a Marvel side project. Most people never even heard of it.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
Big Hero 6 that came out from Disney this fall. Again, mm-hmm. another Marvel project that came out mm-hmm. of a Marvel comic. And they didn't put Marvel anywhere on it. But just that's mm-hmm. the source of it. It's great mm-hmm. stuff.
Absolutely.
Fine.
Yeah.
I'm standing. Are you happy? We're all standing
exactly.
In
exactly.
a circle like a bunch of assholes.
Oh,
very, very funny film.
Well, anyway, you know, unfortunately, we are running out of time. But if you like this witty repartee between Patrick and Matt and myself, get yourself out to Capricorn in Chicago on it is the Valentine's Day weekend. Bring your significant other, hang out.
February 12th through 15th.
If it's any, Margaret Weiss already told us that she's going to be hanging out in the bar. Patrick and I will be there. I'm going to kind of guess Matt's going to be there as well.
Oh, I have to. Okay.
Yes. So we will be hanging out all over the place. So probably a lot in the bar. So come and see us. Come and check out our panels and all that kind of good stuff. And Patrick and I are going to be doing a live podcast. And it should be a lot of fun. So come see us there. Matt, anything else you want to let our listeners know about before we get going?
Come to Capricorn, buy my books.
Simple enough. Simple enough.
Back as Kickstarters, too, when they come
back
out.
Back as Kickstarters, yes, yes. You can follow me on Twitter at John Anilio. Patrick, what do you have going on?
Usual stuff, man. Go over to Kirkus and check out my comic book reviews. I'm expecting Matt to send me a copy of some Magic the Gathering comics so I can actually get those up on Kirkus for him. And, usual stuff. ATFMB, SF Signal, we've got some great stuff going on over there. So always go check that out. Kristen Centricelli, congratulations. She's now the associate editor at SF Signal.
Absolutely.
That means I don't have to do it.
Very good. Very good. All right, everybody. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time. He followed her to school today and broke the teacher's rule. What a time they had that day at school.
Here? It's over. Go home. Go.